Abner Mars is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sport commentator, and most importantly, dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Mars, we'll hear Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is. They chat about topics like the state of boxing, Abner's journey from a kid on the streets to a boxing champion, other sports, music, culture, and family life. So listen to On the Hook with Abner Mars wherever you get your podcasts. Episodes in English are out on Tuesdays. Episodes in Spanish are out on Wednesdays. That's On the Hook with Abner Mars, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Welcome back to another episode of the Golden Bear Cast, where we run you through all of the California Golden Bears news and fun tidbits that you need to know about. Today's podcast is brought to you by Indeed and Bet Online, but we'll get to that later. I have a very special guest on today. The number one slot corner in the country, I still think he is, Mr. Travion Beck. How are you doing, my man?
Man, doing great. Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing all right. You know, it's weird times, but I know you're a Laker fan. I'm a Laker fan. We just won a championship last night, so I am doing fantastic this morning. What were your feelings last night? Like when we were up and the clock's ticking down, you know, LeBron AD walk off the court and you realize we're about to win a championship.
Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. I was ecstatic, like. Just to go out and see LeBron, Anthony Davis, Caruso, Rondo, just going out to see them win number 17, it's like surreal, man. Like, I've been a Laker fan since birth. Like, literally, the first shirt on my body was like a little Laker jacket for babies. Like,
that's awesome.
It was so crazy, man. So, you know, I'm always rock with the Lakers. It's been a very long 10 years, and I'm just glad we're back, man. Back on top where we're supposed to be.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's a good enough pivot to actually start talking about the Bears, because back on top is where we want to go. But just for the people listening, if you don't know who Travion is, which I don't know why you wouldn't, let's go through some of your bio on CalBears.com. Let's see, Cal career 2016 to 2019, played in 43 games with 7 starts, but practically was a starter towards the end of your career at Cal. Contributed career totals of 77 tackles, 5 tackles for a loss, half a sack, 4 interceptions, 10 pass breakups, 14 passes defended, 1 forced fumble, 1 quarterback hurry, and 1 kick return for 17 yards. I did not know you had a kick return on your... Do you remember this kick return?
Yeah, North Carolina, first game, North Carolina 2018, I believe?
Yeah.
Yes.
You got 1 kick return in your career. All right. Posted most of his season highs as a 2018 junior with 32 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss, 3 interceptions, 7 passes defended, and his lone career forced fumble. Had a career high 9 tackles for a loss, his lone career half sack, and 5 pass breakups, as well as his quarterback hurry as a 2019 senior, and his lone kick return for 17 yards was in 2017 as a sophomore. So that's where it is.
Yes.
I mean, that's I think it's pretty clear. You're a fan favorite for those of us that have watched Cal football throughout this time. I just wanted to get your, I guess, first off, like, what's it been like just knowing that you're not, like, after your Cal career is over? You know, you don't have the summer workouts, you don't, like, was it a different transition for you, like, leaving college and that football stuff?
Yes, it's definitely been it's different. I mean, it's my first year, and I'll say, hold on, I'm 22, it's probably my first year in about 16 years where, like, I didn't have, like, some type of team activity going on right now, because I've always played sports my whole life and mostly football. So it's definitely a big change right now. I mean, obviously I'm still training and working out every day, but I mean, it's not with the same structure of being with my teammates.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I wanted to ask you about that. Like, what's it been like for you? Because I know you were supposed to be a part of the pro day on campus, but with the pandemic happening and shelter in place, you know, that ultimately got canceled. Like, what was the process for you, like, leading up to that and then just knowing that you still had to prep, trying to, you know, get your spot to try your talent at the next level?
I mean, I was still prepping every day, still working out every day. And basically, you just have to really try to sell yourself to teams. So you're trying to work your way from the bottom to the top just by really aggressively selling yourself, whether that's with you, whether the agency you're signed with. And it's a pretty difficult process because, I mean, a lot of people didn't get pro days, so a lot of people were doing the same thing that I was doing. And, you know, this comes down to, like, this is hard times for everybody right now. And we're all just trying to push through it. And, you know, hopefully when this is all over, we all just go back to normal and we all get another fair chance.
Yeah, most definitely. I think all of us are rooting for you to get that chance at the next level. So 49ers, if you're listening to this, we know you need a defensive back. Got one on the podcast right now. But in the meantime, let's talk a little about football, because I want your unique take on just what's currently going on. Because the team had this moment of, hey, we're not having football this year, and then now we're saying we have football this year. Like, what's it like from a player's perspective to have that schedule just be so uncertain of, and then being certainly told you that you're not going to have a season this calendar year, and then for you to have to, like, turn that off and go into off-season mode, and then about a month and a, like, 2 months later tell you, no, football's back on, and you have to turn on that, you know, readiness and preparation schedule.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very difficult. I mean, going from to just relaxing and just hanging out with friends and chilling every day to immediately have to hit that on button and go right back to, you know, being focused and dealing with football. I mean, that's definitely a big transition. But knowing my guys up in Berkeley, I mean, I visited them a few times during this pandemic, just, you know, talk to them, make sure their head is clear. Got the chance to go up to Berkeley a few weeks ago, actually, just to check in on them. And, I mean, they've been working their butt off. I mean, when you have a good culture set, I mean, you can really do anything. I mean, the sky's the limit. The biggest thing is just getting everybody on board. And, you know, Coach Wilcox has really, like, even when I was there, he really instilled within us a great culture. So it was great just seeing them, like, still working out, you know, by themselves, social distancing, following all the rules, but, you know, still being able to get that work in, just being optimistic and hoping that there will be a season. I mean, now they're ready. I feel like they're ahead of the curve. I mean, I don't know how many other teams in the Pac-12 are really preparing as hard as they were, but I feel like a lot of players on the team are physically ready.
Got it. You know, one of the questions that I had, because I didn't play any sport at the level that you played at, you know, there was a lot of talk about maybe having a football schedule come January, right? Like pushing it off to the spring. From an actual player standpoint, like, how viable is that to have an actual, like, let's say 6 or 7 game season, let's say that starts in January, and then you get, you know, the summer off, and then you have to turn around and play again come, you know, the end of August, September? Like, is that asking too much of a player from a body and physical standpoint?
I would say it depends. It depends on what type of staff you're with. I mean, I with Coach Wilcox and up in Berkeley, I wouldn't say it would have been too hard because they're really good with management and managing their players. Like, they're not going to, like, push our bodies to a limit. They're going to make sure we're physically sound to play, but they're not out there trying to kill us or hurt us or anything, or have us run 200 play scrimmages or anything like that. No, they're just going to make sure we're learning. They're going to make sure we're disciplined, and they're going to make sure we're doing everything right. As far as the season starting in January and then restarting back up the next fall, that that would have been very far-fetched. That's a lot of wear and tear on your body to go out and play 8 games and then come back again and play, what was it, 12 games? Like,
yeah.
That's a lot of wear and tear on your body. So I'm glad they got, you know, this done and got a deal done and that they'll have these 7 games. And I want to see my Bears do good.
I mean, let's talk about the Bears doing good. You know, we have a schedule now, finally, that we can talk about. We got November 7th, Washington at home to start things off. Then we got to travel to Arizona State on the 14th. Then we travel up to Corvallis in Oregon State on the 21st. Come home to play the big game on a Friday, Thanksgiving weekend. Then we host Oregon on December 5th. Then we go to Washington State on December 12th. And then we have that 7th game, which is undecided because, you know, hopefully we'll be playing in the championship game on the 18th. So, but beyond that, like, what's your take on the schedule? Like, just the Washington, like, starting off with Washington and playing all those games. Like, walk me through those opponents through your eyes.
Okay, so you have, first up, you have Washington. New quarterback coming into town. That's always bad to do against the Cal defense. So, you know, I feel like that's going to be a game where we bring out a few wrinkles within our defense, get a lot of interceptions, and just keep playing hard. Arizona State, that's a tricky one. Obviously, they have Jaden Daniels, a pretty solid defense. Lost some playmaking receivers, so that's pretty good. But I still think Cal sneaks out of there with a win. That's going to be a hard-fought win, though. Oregon State, they upset us last year. I'm still very upset about that. So I hope we really just run away with it this year.
Yeah.
Oh, Stanford, gotta bring that, gotta keep that X, man.
Yeah.
There's no choice. The only game on this schedule that really frightened me was Oregon. I know a lot of their players are opting out for the draft. They have a lot of talent. They have some really good talent on that team. They're also very well coached. I mean, I know we were in a shootout last year without our starting quarterback, without Chase.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully Chase will be back fully healthy again this year. That's going to be a – I want to watch that game. I'm definitely going to watch that game really closely. That's going to be a good game. And then, definitely going to get the win at – Washington State. So I like the way the schedule is set up. I don't know how they. I do. But yeah, I like the way the schedule is set up. It's, I mean, looks like it's gonna be action packed. Looks pretty fun. I would have loved to see a little SC or UCLA action on there, but
yeah.
But I mean, it's gonna be a good. It's a nice solid schedule. And I feel like they're gonna perform well this year.
I mean, you brought it up. Like, you brought up that question about. Arizona State, like, something about us playing in that state is something always is, you know, goes weird. Yes. and all that. Like, what do you think that is? Like, just like, and from a player's perspective, like, just, you had 4 years at Cal, like, you've been to this, you've played in the state of Arizona a few times, including a bowl game, which of course, you know, is a cult classic now. Like, what is it like, and do those like little, like, you know, like the history and like how weird it gets in Arizona, like, does that play into a mind of a player, you know, when you're like prepping that week?
I mean coaches will always try to preach, like, don't worry about statistics, analytics, things like that, just go out and play.
Yeah.
So we really don't be thinking about it, or trying not to think about it. But I mean, you're right. I mean, this is, I don't understand what's up with the Cal Bears in the state of Arizona, man. It's just, I just couldn't tell you. I could tell you, but we have some wacky games there, whether it was versus Arizona a few years ago versus TCU. I just honestly cannot tell you. It's crazy. But I mean, hopefully they end that this year, like we ended two streaks these past 2 years, and just, you know, get the W. I mean, that's all you can really do. Just go out there and fight till you get the W.
Yeah. I mean, I had some questions here from, you know, our writing staff, and our buddy Christopher H. He he does our offensive previews, mm-hmm. which is where he previews the offense of the opposing team. So he thinks in the eyes of our defense. He's got two questions that he wanted me to ask you. The first thing is, you know, he wrote, mainly curious how different it feels physically going into a season without a whole offseason of training. I think he kind of touched on that. But how about personally for you, and I don't need you to speak for mm-hmm. everyone else, just for you. How do you feel about playing schools and states with just the coronavirus and the pandemic and it being handled differently in those states? You know, mainly we were just talking about Arizona uh-huh. State.
Yes.
From a player's perspective, like does that play a little bit into how you prep? Maybe adds a little bit of unknowing stress, you know, to you mentally.
To an extent, I would say. I mean, yeah, we always want to keep our bodies safe. That's really the main thing here. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody obviously wants to catch this virus. Nobody obviously wants to be sick in the middle of a pandemic. So, I mean, for me in particular, when I'm on that football field, everything else goes out of my mind. Uh-huh. So if I'm stepping on the field, I'm not thinking about the pandemic. I'm not thinking about a virus. I'm just thinking about how can I help my team win this game right now. And I guess that's the biggest thing for me in particular. Like, I don't know how everybody else reacts to the situation. But, you know, when it's time to strap up the helmet and shoulder pads, I mean, I'm out there to win. I'm not out there for anything else.
Yeah, definitely. I can definitely see that happening. And then the other question he had, he's curious what you think about artificial crowd noise that they've been doing in the NFL. Will it be weird to play without crowd noise in a college game? Should the stadium blast noise at you on third down when a team is backed into their own end zone and situations like that, etc.?
Yeah, you can't really the artificial crowd noise. It doesn't seem like it works that well because you can't really fake that. Like a real crowd versus a fake one, you just feel like you feel it. Like, it kind of gets your blood going. Like, hearing people chant, hearing different things the fans are saying, you know, seeing people having fun, like seeing people watching you, it's just different, you know. I don't know. I just feel like it's quite odd, but I mean, I feel like it's kind of necessary to bring some authenticity to the game, but I mean, it's still kind of odd to me, but. You know, they have to do what they have to do.
Yeah, I mean, on that note, like, let me ask you, which stadium that you played in was the hardest stadium to play at just because of the crowd noise?
Oregon. Oh, Autzen. My God. Oh, my God. I hated playing that way.
like honestly, what does that feel like on the field? Like, how loud does it get? Like,
it's just Oregon has so many theatrics. Like, they'll play music. People are dancing. Random fireworks. The duck is irritating. I mean, it's just so much that goes on, but it's like it gets you excited too. It gets you pumped up for everything, and it's just you know, it's just like it helps you be thankful that you're still playing football, man. That's really it. It's like sometimes you just look around in the crowd and you just gaze. And you just think, like, wow, like, this is really life right now. Like, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, that's a good part of it.
Yeah. Let's take a step back. Let's talk about a couple years, like your junior and senior year at Cal. You know, mm-hmm. that's your junior year is when the Takers kind of took off. And your senior year, it kind of felt like, you know, opposing offenses were pretty much afraid to throw at you guys because of what you guys had done your junior year. And, you know, if you look at the statistics for you guys your senior year, it's definitely not as, you know, it's not as high as they were your junior year.
Right.
Do you guys kind of feel like they, you know, teams knowing what you guys can do were more hesitant to throw at you?
I would say to an extent, I feel like our senior year, we were also hit with a variety of injuries.
Uh-huh.
I missed a few games. Ashton missed a few games. Jalen missed a few games. We just kept getting bombarded with injuries. That didn't really help us. I mean, I know we still had a great record, but I felt like our senior year was really the year to kick the door in. I mean, we had some really close games. Like some really, really close games that I feel like we could have snuck out with the win if everybody was healthy. And I feel like that just played a big part, like a huge part in our success that year as well.
I mean, two of the most marquee like wins for Cal fans your junior and senior year is one is the breaking of the SC at the SC streak. Like walk me through that. Like being from LA and then going back and then breaking that streak, and you of course with the interception that was huge. Like just walk me through your emotions, like that game, just a bit like unfiltered what you were thinking.
Oh man, I had about I probably had about 60 to 70 family members there, man. I'm just thinking I'm thinking to myself the whole game, like, oh my god, there's so many people watching me. Like being from LA and being a kid that played in almost every city in LA, I mean, I played Pop Warner football in Carson, Inglewood, Compton. I mean, it's just like you just like, oh my god, like all eyes are on me, like I'm back home, like I've always wanted to play here. Like it's just it was just amazing, like just to be able to go back into that stadium. I mean, we're down 14 at halftime, you know, a lot of talking going on between the locker rooms. You know, we just had to put our foot back on the gas, because I mean, we knew we had the talent, we knew we could do it. We just had to put our foot on the gas that game, and we just needed our playmakers to make plays. And I mean, that's really it. So our playmakers went out and made plays. We had Vic Warden, Chase was gaining his confidence as the game was going. I had a nice interception. Cam had some nice pass breakups. I mean, so once we started to lock in, it just changed the tide of the whole game, and it was just amazing. That's all I can really say. It was just amazing, man, getting that win.
Like, what was the locker room feel like? Just because you guys probably knew like how long that streak was, and for to get that win at that, and then do it not even at home, but do it at the Coliseum.
Getting that win was it like we were all excited, man. I mean, I'd say about, at the time, maybe about 40% of the team was from like the LA area or the Southern California area.
Yeah.
So it was, everybody's like, wow. Like, cause I mean, let's be honest, we all grew up, like you grew up in Southern California, like you grew up watching USC. I mean,
right.
Yeah. You had the Reggie Bush era, Matt Leiner, Lindell White. Like you just had so many great players and you're like, wow, like I want to play there one day. And then you go to a school up in the Bay Area, and now you have to play against them. So it just felt good, especially like losing to them the last few years. It just felt good to finally get that win.
Yeah, because you guys knocked on the door, you know, a few times in breaking that streak, and you know, and then finally to do it. I mean, I know a lot of people that cried at the stadium, you know, when you guys won. So you know how much that means to this fan base.
Yes, I definitely I cried as well. So I definitely dropped a few tears.
Oh man, I mean, and then let's talk about the other one. Let's talk about bringing the axe back home. Like, what was the? Just walk me through like that week, getting the axe back, or like the game. And then closing out on that final drive where you guys stopped them and got the ball back after Chase, you know, took the lead. Like, what was it like just being there?
It was, I mean, we throughout the week, we were not trying to be so tense. We weren't trying to make it like, oh, this is, you know, I mean, obviously it's Cal versus Stanford, but we were just trying to treat it like it's another game. We're going to go out, we're going to execute the game plan, and we're going to win. And that's essentially what we did. I mean, we came out, they struck first, obviously, with a very long deep ball. And after that, we were like, okay, we're going to lock back in. You know, we've come back from down before. We're going to lock in. We're going to make some great plays. I mean, Daniel Scott came in and made a diving interception. Like,
yeah.
Like, oh, my God. Like, we just made some great plays. Jayhawk with the one-handed interception.
Right.
It's like we came out and did what we had to do. I'm still very upset with Coach Wilcox to this day for not calling a timeout on my interception. But it's okay. but it's okay because we won the game. But he knows I'm still very upset with him to this day. But it is okay. But you know, we had a great game plan in place, and we just came out and made more plays than they made. And our defense stepped up, and Chase played out of his mind, and we just did great, and we got the W. And it was just feels great to get the act back. It's like I've been here for 4 years and ended two streaks. Like, it's great. Like, I've ended two streaks. We beat SEC teams. I mean, we went to North Carolina and won. It's just, I mean, it was a great 4 years at Cal. Like, unforgettable. Like, definitely unforgettable. Like, we had the time of our lives. And, you know, I'm just happy. I'm just happy I got to experience that.
I mean, so take me, just to take a step back, like, take me back to the Stanford game. We had just won. And, like, what do you remember? Like, do you just remember, like, the fans just rushing on the field and all of a sudden you're in this huge mosh pit, like, jumping up and down? Like, what was that from your perspective?
Oh, man, I just remember taking so many photos. I don't know how many I don't know how many people have photos with me, but I was taking photos for forever. I missed the whole post-game speech that Coach Wilcox gave in the locker room. Me and J-Hawk were on the field for, like, maybe 45 minutes to an hour after the game ended, just taking pictures and talking to people and just being with our family. That's all I remember. That's it. I just remember so many people around us, and it was great.
I guess the thing I got to ask, did you get a picture with the axe?
Yeah. Wait, did I take a picture with the axe? I think I did. Oh, I did. Okay. Once I went back to the locker room, I definitely got a picture with the axe.
Yeah, because I was going to say, if you took that many photos for an hour, like, you got to at least get a picture with the thing that you won, you know, not just with people and fans, which is great, but, you know, you need some memorable photos too.
Right. Definitely got one with the axe.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. That is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
With that, let's dive into some questions from fans for you. We got one from Phil Snow on Twitter. He says, who is the most difficult wide receiver to cover on the team? So on our team. Who was the most difficult wide receiver out of the opponents that you had to cover?
On our team, definitely 100%. It's a toss up. It would either most difficult to cover. Nico, definitely Nico.
Nico.
Yeah, Nico Remigio. I mean, he's because you know me, I'm very smart in the game of football, so I know a lot of different things. I pay attention to a lot of different things, and Nico is just as smart. So he'll see what I do as well, and he'll start to know find counters as the same way I would do to him. Yeah. So one-on-ones in practice when me and Nico would like get everybody excited. It's like, okay, like let's see what happens here. Like he's smart, he's fast. Like he's like he has deceptive speed. Like he's actually pretty fast. Like he can separate really well. And he's a great route runner too. Mm-hmm. So I mean I would definitely say it was Nico.
What about out of the opponents? Is there anyone that just memorable to you?
I would say not particularly as a route runner, but this guy was definitely the hardest to keep up with. I'd say Elijah Moore from Ole Miss.
Uh-huh.
He's a great player. He's definitely a playmaker. He wasn't the best route runner, but I would really have to stay on him close because the ball in his hand, he was very dangerous. So that was probably definitely my toughest matchup of my career.
We got Shrey asking, what was the most interesting or difficult to read offense that you've come up against as a Cal corner?
Difficult to read offense. Who just straight up gave us trouble? For me in particular, it had to be Ole Miss again. It was that Ole Miss 2019.
Yeah.
They ran an RPO offense, and mm-hmm. I was their read guy every time. And I was trying to stay attached to Elijah Moore as much as I can because they're reading me. And every time they would read me, it could either go to Elijah Moore or Matt Corral can run the ball. So it was like I was kept constantly getting put in a bind to where I would have to choose one. And I would choose Elijah Moore every time. And Matt Corral would just keep breaking for like 20-yard runs and 10-yard runs. And I'm like, okay, I have to figure out what to do. Like I have to just figure out like how I can play the both of them. And it started towards like the second or third quarter. I started figuring it out. And that's when we started slowing them down. So that was pretty good. I liked our offense.
I mean, I guess talking about that, I have an additional question from that. It's because when Jordan Kanasic, right before he left for the NFL, he did like this sit down film review with a lot of the beat writers, and we were talking, just showing us tape and stuff, and we asked him, if there was any game that was super memorable, and the one that he said to us was, I'm not sure if we can bring up the name of the team, but I'm sure you'll remember, which is he said there was one team where you guys knew exactly what play they were going to run like when they got to the line of scrimmage. Like there was one game. And I know what team it is, but I'll decline to say it.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, what was that like from your end? I mean, JK told us his side of the story, but from you guys on the back end, like, and what was that like just knowing that you knew every play that they were going to run? And how did that even come about? Like, was it from the tape that you watched? Yeah, like,
for the DBs, I spent probably a good 4 hours one day with Coach Shu, who was our one of the GAs on our team at the time. And we watched 4 hours of their film. And they just do their signals right in front of you. So it's like, why not use them? Like, I don't know. I mean, we see it right there on the tape. So it's like, why not, I don't know. It's like, why not? Like, they're right there. So it's like, every time they came to the line, like, we knew what play they were running. Like, to an extent, like we knew what one side of the field was doing, so we had to just, I guess, kind of play guess with the other side of the field. But I mean, all plays are like mirrored of each other, so it was crazy. That was a crazy game. But
like, was it? I mean, did you see? Like, do you notice confusion in the eyes of the opponents? Like, just because they were like, what the hell? Like, how do they know what we're doing on that side of the field every single time?
Yeah, I just don't understand how they didn't know. I'm like, you guys are like, you guys are showing us the play. Like it was, I mean, you know, we'll take it.
From a player's perspective in that sort of game, like, do you get a little bit more relaxed because you're not as tense like pre-snap, right? Because you already kind of know what's going to be happening on one side of the ball.
Right, yeah. So it's like if you're on the opposite side of the ball, like if you're on the opposite side of the field, you're just like, oh, crap. But, you know, one side of the field, we know what we have going. So, I mean, that was always good.
That's awesome. Yeah, I always wanted to ask some of the guys of that game, and just because Jordan brought it up with us, but we weren't ever able to talk about it. But, you know, since most of you guys who played that game, I think, are, you know, either still, like, are about to graduate or have graduated, so we definitely start talking about it a little bit.
All right.
Oh, man. I mean, I guess the thing we can kind of just, like, end with a little bit. You talked about, you know, how you were in Berkeley a few weeks ago. And if my memory serves me correct, there's a video of you when you got your Cal offer.
Oh, yeah.
Of you running around like crazy. And I think that's the moment a lot of Cal fans knew that we wanted to have you, you know, on the team, like as a fan favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But was your experience here like everything you expected? Just because you had so much joy on that tape as soon as you got that offer, right?
Yeah.
So like, yeah, you know, just looking back at your 4 years, like, was it everything you expected it to be? Was it more? I'm assuming you wanted to accomplish more on the football field.
Yeah.
But just overall,
you know, every college experience has its ups and downs. I mean, we went through a lot of change in these 4 years. I mean, obviously coming in, you know, with Sonny Dykes and then transitioning to Coach Wilcox. I mean, it was definitely a lot of change. But I mean, overall, I love Berkeley. Like, I love the Bay Area. It's very, 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 very different from Southern California and LA County, but overall, I mean, I loved it. I love the scenery. I love the people. I mean, I love going to school there. Like, I feel like, you know, I talked to a lot of my other friends about, like, schooling, because, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm a big school guy as well. So I talked to my other friends about schooling and that such, and, you know, just hearing their stories about their professors and how they're graded and things, and then, you know, going back to my experience at Berkeley, I'm like, you know, like, I kind of love Berkeley. Like, I love the professors. I love the lifestyle there. Like, it was a great time overall.
The two things I wanted to ask as we wrap up here. First thing is, what are your go-to places to eat when you come up here? Like, what are some stalwart places? I know, like, Coin Dang, you know, I tweeted at him because his photos of him with his body change came up, and I asked him what he's been eating because I want to get on that diet immediately. And he listed off a bunch, and he also included two Korean restaurants, which I'm all for since I'm a Korean American. But for you, like in Berkeley, like what are the places you always have to go, or like you always ate at when you were a student?
Definitely Blondie's, which is now called Abe's, and oh my god, what's the place on Telegraph? Not on Telegraph. No, it's on Telegraph. What's that? You know what I'm talking about, the little sit down place on Telegraph. I don't know why I'm having a mind blank right now.
What type of food was it?
It was they had pasta bene. There we go.
Pasta bene.
There we go. Pasta bene. That is my pasta bene is my favorite spot. Like 10 out of 10, definitely my favorite spot. I love pasta bene. Yeah, that was the go-to for me.
That was your go-to?
Yes, definitely.
The last thing I wanted to ask is, I had Chase Garbers on the podcast about a month ago, and I asked him, who is the best 2K or Madden player on the team? He said there's a couple on the team right now, but he mentioned you. He said he's no longer on the team now, but Travion was really good. Are you the self-proclaimed, or have you been tried and tested? Are you the best Madden 2K player out of the last 4-5 years?
I have definitely been tried by many, 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 many people, and yet I am still the undefeated champion on the UC Berkeley campus. Nobody can stop me. I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm the best D coordinator and offensive coordinator out there. And, you know, I'm just pretty good at Madden. Like, I know what I'm doing. I know what plays to call, and I have good stick work. And, you know, I really take pride in being a great Madden player as well. So, yes, I mean, many, many have come. Many have tried, and nobody has succeeded. So, until somebody succeeds, I will go down as the best Madden player in Cal football history.
I mean, I can't beat that. I think that has to be the way we end it.
Yes.
Probably the best close there is. That's it for us here on the Golden Bear Cast. If you're listening to us, you already found us, so I don't need to tell you where to find us. But you can find us on Twitter at Golden Bear Cast. You can find me at Rob118WAMG. Trey, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Hey I'm Trey, T-R-A-Y. And you can find me on Instagram at TreyBeck22.
And that's it for us from the Golden Bear Cast. And as always, go Bears.